Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
What are you looking at there, Jim? Blueprints?
Yeah, I'm thinking about building a little recording studio in my home.
If that's the case, Jim, there are three letters that will lead you to success. D-I-Y.
Okay, as promised, day two of Bill Mulligan.
Day two, Mulligan, part two.
That's right. The patron episode, we're trying to cut into the backlog he has. He saved up a whole bunch. Basically, I think his plan is he was going to save up so many that he could just fire us. It'd be a hostile takeover. And then he just takes over the show, right?
I don't know. That sounds like work.
Yeah.
Yeah, be careful, Bill.
Yeah.
Not as easy as we make it.
No.
Seem to be. Right.
When we say we, I mean Jeff.
So... anyway, the show is Rock the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
We're talking about music out on the deck here in Northern Virginia. Dog hanging out, playing with Bill, trying to get Bill a lot of kisses earlier.
Succeeding,
yeah,
despite Bill's trying to stop him.
No, it's my ground beef cologne that I'm tracking.
So anyway, I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And as I mentioned, Bill Mulligan is here.
Hello.
Hello. And then also we have Tim Hoffman.
Yes.
Yep. Right. Hello, everyone.
So when we do patron episodes with people who live in our area, we like to have them here in person. We haven't been able to do that in such a long time,
such
and now
a treat.
We can, right?
I know. It's a thrill. It really is to do this again. And we've had so much fun over the years having people just sit out here or at my place or anywhere together, just, you know, going through the episodes. It makes it a lot of fun.
How does it feel for you guys to be out of the house finally and being able to visit with people?
It's great. Yeah. Wonderful. I didn't realize, and a group of us, including four of us sitting here, went to a Nationals game recently, and I didn't realize till I got there how much I had been missing getting out
absolutely.
And being a normal person.
I know.
That
normal,
was
so
great. So fun.
Yeah, oh I mean, I started listening to the podcast just, you know, probably around January or February, a couple months before the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
I was just starting to get into it. And then when I became a patron... always thinking like, yeah, I want to be on the deck and like record an episode, or I want to be the tiki bar had heard about. Yeah. Like, there's all these things. I'm like, yeah, this is gonna be great. And then everything shut down.
Yeah.
So this is a dream come true.
Yeah,
really
great.
It's great.
I'll tell you, Bill and I, it was fun because Bill and I rode out here together, and my youngest offspring actually gave us a ride, and she was encouraging us. She's good friends with Greg Wilson's daughter Ashley to get in touch with him and get him back in the mix. So we might have to do that one.
Oh, we'll record at the Tiki Bar.
Yeah, we got to do that. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I'm just saying that, but I'm sure Greg will.
Oh,
let's do it.
I think he'd be very happy.
Not on a day like today.
No.
Because you want to enjoy the pool. It's
got
a pool,
go in the pool
back there, too.
Got to go in the pool.
Not just the pond, but
no,
also
I
the
really
pool.
Want to go.
That's right. Great pool right there. Yeah.
And it's really nice, but not today.
No, no.
No, it's only like 55 today or something like that. Not so good.
We're holding ourselves.
You have on a knit cap. You have
I
on
do.
A toque. It's so cold. All right. So here we are, as I mentioned, on the deck. We are doing the second patron episode this week of Bill Mulligan's, meaning he gets to pick the topic.
Yep.
Yesterday we talked about KTEL Records, and what do we have on tap today?
Compilation albums, specifically compilation sets.
Like series.
A series, sets. Yes.
Yeah, got
series.
It. Okay, got it. All right, then kick us off.
So this actually was where I was initially aiming, was the compilation sets, and then I started looking into KTEL because that's what people think of generally when they think of compilations, especially of people of a certain age. As we said yesterday, the KTEL products especially didn't have a particularly good reputation for quality.
Right.
I mean, the construction. They were lightweight. They were all LPs back then, vinyl.
Yep.
And they were lightweight and densely packed grooves. But not all compilations are like that.
Right.
Some labels, Rhino Records in specific, take great care with their compilation sets. They select the music very carefully, and the production process is exacting, and they're quality products. And I brought with me today two compilation sets that are really big parts of my record collection, both literally in terms of the number of discs and just in terms of how important they are to me. The first one, which you guys have said you know of, is Rhino Records DIY series.
Yes.
This was put out in, started I think in 93, DIY, do it yourself. It's a reference to the do it yourself ethos of punk music and the kind of the associated power pop and new wave.
Yep.
That came along after it or alongside it. As I mentioned, it's a 9-disc set, 5 of the discs concentrate on punk music, 2 on UK punk, 1 on the Los Angeles scene, 1 on Boston, and 1 on New York.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then there's another pair that concentrate on UK power pop. Now, compilation sets, you know, most people, I guess, you could want to buy a compilation for one of two reasons. One is because you want to explore the theme of the set, and the other might be because you know that you like the music and you want to have it all in one place, probably for less money. This is it, the DIY series for me, even though I was familiar with this music, was definitely the former.
Totally agree. Yep.
This was an exploration of it.
Yep.
And these first 7 discs that I've mentioned, these discs were probably my first exposure to groups like Stiff Little Fingers,
Yep.
The Damned, Stranglers, The Nerves.
Yeah.
Groups now that are really important to me. And to be honest, I didn't hear them back in the late 70s or the early 80s whenever they were floating around. And this was my introduction to them.
Yes.
So the I mentioned it was 9. The final 2 volumes in the set are UK Power Pop, or just UK Pop, excuse me. UK Pop 1, UK Pop 2.
There's a UK Pop, and then there's 2 American Power Pop, right?
Actually, there's 2 UK Pops.
Yep.
And 2 American Power Pops.
Yes, yes, got it. Okay.
These are completely in my wheelhouse. These 2 albums, the
UK Pop ones?
UK Pop 1 and UK Pop 2.
Yep.
These are some of my favorite songs. Again, stuff I didn't hear at the time.
Yeah.
But some of my favorite stuff is on here. The stuff I had known before. Nick Lowe, XTC, Squeeze. But this is where I first heard Buzzcocks, The Undertones, The Yachts, Bram Tchaikovsky, Reckless Eric, The Kersall Flyers. The best way I can express it, and I hope people know what this means, I feel when I listen to this like I'm sitting in the offices of Stiff Records back in 1977. It's enough to make me wish that I had lived in Margaret Thatcher's England and been able to experience this, nice. This firsthand.
Yeah.
Most of the stuff on here, there's some things that were moderate hits, especially for people who are, you know, into that scene, but none of these are hits. So it's definitely the kind of collection where either you don't know the field very well and you want to explore it, or you know it, but these are the obscure things that you never got around to the first time or never hit you the first time. So this is probably my favorite compilation set.
It's so great. I'm with you all the way on this, Bill. I bought all these when they came out in 93.
It started in 93.
And as much as I thought I knew about, you know, sort of alternative and, you know, going back to late 70s punk and all that kind of stuff, I realized I didn't know nearly as much as I thought.
Exactly.
Right? And so like Stiff Little Fingers is a perfect example. I didn't know Stiff Little Fingers at all. Those are 2 of their songs, I think, on here. And
yes.
They're amazing songs.
Oh, yeah. They're fantastic.
Just amazing songs. There's a band on there called Eddie and the Hot Rods.
Yeah.
Yes.
Tremendous, right? Like, how would I ever come across that,
I know.
If not for this compilation?
Yeah.
Who does the song Ghosts of Princes and Towers? The Rich Kids.
Yeah, Rich Kids. Yeah, the band that was formed after the Sex Pistols.
Right, I did not know until I heard this and then looked into them, right? And I found that out. So was it Glenn Matlock?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the guy who got kicked out of the Sex Pistols.
Yeah, Glenn Matlock. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was
for
his
Sid.
Next band.
Yeah.
Ex-Sex Pistols giving you a lesson on English history.
Right,
the English monarchy.
Just like God himself.
But that's one of my favorite songs now. Yes, I love that song.
It's an amazing song. I mean, I'm not being really eloquent here, but the yachts on here, which are Look Back in Love, Not in Anger, and the yachting types. I just got the actual album, The Yachts, from Discogs.
Oh, the other day.
Stuff that you just wonder how, well, I don't wonder how it got wasn't a hit here. I kind of know why it wasn't a hit here. But I wish it had been a hit here, or I wish I'd been able to hear this stuff back then. These kids today don't know what it's like to know that there's music. There's a music scene going on in London, but not be able to hear what it is because you can't just hop on the internet back in 1978.
So we talked about this one a little bit when we talked about the Undertones.
That's
on another episode. Because the other cool thing about this series is they gave each edition like a little name of a song.
That's right. They did.
That thematically ties to it. So this one, UK Pop 1, is also called Teenage Kicks. Right? So we talked about that. That was the first time I heard the song Teenage Kicks was from this CD.
Me too.
So many songs. Yeah.
Oh my God. That's like a life-changing song when you hear that song. That's it. You know, I've heard like the greatest pop song ever. And then this one here is called Starry Eyes. Another incredible pop song.
Amazing tune.
Right? By the Records.
Yeah.
A lot of these were like, even if they were hits in UK or whatever, they were, they might have been just like one hit wonders or not a ton. So that's perfect for a compilation, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's also like really valuable in terms of like exploring and learning new stuff that, you know, as we're flipping through these and open up the jewel cases and looking at stuff, just the amount of information that's included in the booklets that's kind of in the sleeve there, just like for someone who, you know, might look at the track list and be like, oh, I know a few of these, a lot of these I don't know. But then when you read the stuff that's in the liner notes, like you get a lot of background information and history of the bands and the members of the bands. And like, and there you go. Once you're after that, you're hooked.
Totally. And I want, that's why I want to go back where Bill started, where he said some compilations are crafted with care. Right. Yeah. And this is that. You can tell the people who put this together really cared about creating like an artifact of that time, you know, that this is, maybe it's not totally complete. There'll be people out there who will quibble, why didn't you put this band in or whatever, right? But Patrick, you probably know, you know, probably more than any of us about these eras of music, but they're like pretty good representation of those years that are listed, right? In that style.
Amazing representations. Yeah. And you're right, Jim, they're amazing artifacts. And I remember off, you know, when we interviewed Andy Zaks for the Woodstock box set that came out, I'm not sure if we recorded it, maybe have been just casually conversing, but he was talking about being in, you know, the room with Gary Stewart, who curated a lot of these compilations, and them deciding, like, they were actually having arguments like, oh, we're down to like 18 or 19, like, what's going to get in there? So not only was it like having the coolest friend ever making you the best mixtape of a certain part of music, but it gave you that history lesson, Tim. Like you were saying, it wasn't like they just K-Tel just tossed you off there in the dark. Like, here was the context, and here's what it meant, and here's what happened to the group. And like Bill said, you bought the album by the group when you heard these Rhino things. Right. You never did that for K-Tel. You know, you just wanted the song. But this was a whole different world of explanation. And I guess the other thing I'll say was, for those of us who were close to it when it was happening in the 90s, it looked like for a while, folks, vinyl was going to die completely. Like, it was going to be gone. And part of this was preserving stuff that was on 7-inch singles and limited edition records and EPs. And, you know, like, Tower Records was closing. There were no, like, the vinyl was gone from record stores. It was all CDs. Like, you thought, well, this is just something we're going to have to accept. And I think that's why we all started buying CDs and started replacing albums, because we thought they were going to die. And obviously, it didn't, thank the Lord. But this was another big part of that.
Totally agree. And I just want to talk about, I know Bill has another set he wants to get into, another Rhino record set. But I'm going to talk about, real quickly, I have a 2-disc Rhino series. They only did 2 of these from around the same time, called Faster and Louder, which is hardcore punk.
Yep.
And to me, kind of like what we were just saying here, this is great, like, preservation work.
Yeah.
Because a lot of those bands, you know, they were just self-releasing 7-inches, right?
Yep.
Or if they put out an album, you know, it was just 500 copies, right?
That's right.
And maybe, you know, it makes some stores, you know, around a region or that kind of thing, right?
It was the money you saved from your gigs in the shoebox, and you had enough to make the 7-inch.
So to me, I felt like these Rhino guys were really doing important work.
Absolutely.
And saying, like, not only are we going to collect this, but we're going to then expose it to a much bigger audience,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And I love those CDs as well. And you just,
yeah,
I just, you know, you got this really great sense that the people at Rhino really cared about this. This was not, in no way was this just an attempt to just like cash in on something or make a bunch of money, you know?
No, totally a labor of love. And I think this Boston scene to me is one of the most interesting ones because of how, I don't want to say the scene was insular, but it was very self-sufficient, right? Everything in Boston kind of was feeding the other things that were happening in Boston. They didn't need New York, you know, they didn't need Chicago or anything else to validate what they were doing. Yet it was a very accepting scene. I mean, the Cars and the Del Fuegos and Robin Lynn and the Chartbusters all exist side by side on there with Mission of Burma. And that, to me, like putting that together is a tremendous example of how you capture a scene in a time, even though it's a, what, 5-year span
Love
or 6-year span.
So this one, the DIY Mass Ave, the Boston scene, 75 to 83.
So that's one of the most, to me, one of the most revelatory of all these CDs. And I don't have all these. And I've actually never seen this Shake It Up, American Power Pop 2. I've never come across it.
Oh, wow.
And it's amazing that Bill used to have it, and now it's gone. It's amazing that's the one you're missing, and that's the only one I didn't have. Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of missing one of these, UK Pop 1, this went missing on me for about a year.
Did it
I was getting frantic. Panicked. And then I finally found it one day, miscategorized, misfiled. But it's
like, I was always afraid to sort of even loan these out to people.
Oh yeah,
right?
Those are one of the ones you probably didn't loan out.
Especially because it's a series, like you don't.
That's
want
right.
It.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you buy them all as they came out, Bill, or how did you acquire all these?
I think I bought most of them when they came out, but as you can see from the notch,
there's a cutout there. Yeah,
I came across this one later. So
I think I have all but two. I don't believe I have the L.A. scene, and I obviously have I've never even seen
the
that
L.A. scene. One's great because that one does go a bit into hardcore stuff because
that was
what the L.A.
part of that.
Punk scene was.
Yep.
The other thing, too, so I was buying these when they came out because I was so in love with them. I don't know how I discovered it. I read an article or something. But I was not making a lot of money at this point in my life. 1993, I was
still in
that first job out of college, still kind of thing, you know. And CDs were not cheap. I don't know if people really remember this, but CDs were kind of expensive,
bucks a pop,
you know.
Yeah.
And so I was dedicated. I'm like, I'm getting all of these, and that was a big chunk of money for me at that time.
List price was pretty expensive.
Why I kind of dropped out of this next set that Bill wants to talk about, and I only got like 3 or 4 of them, and then I couldn't keep up. So what's the next one here you wanted to talk about?
So the first one, as I said, was a good example of compilations as exploration. This next set is also Rhino. It's New Wave Hits of the 80s.
Yep.
And this is a perfect exemplar of how to get all the songs in one place, the songs you know and love in one place, hopefully for less money.
Yeah.
So these started not that long after, about 94, I think, is when they started coming up with these. There are 15 volumes plus the unnumbered Christmas volume. So 15 volumes, 16 tracks each. So 240 songs.
Wow.
I didn't do an exhaustive survey, but my guess is that at least half of these songs hit the top 40.
Wow.
Okay.
You know, the music of the time. Let me just pick one at random.
Randomly.
Pop Music by M.
Yeah.
Hit Me With Your Rhythm Stick. That may have been a... Echo Beach, Martha and the Muffins. This was stuff that was either hits that almost anybody from that era would know.
Yep.
Or certainly hits that enough of a hit that people who are into that kind of college music alternative in the 80s scene would know. So this was familiar music.
And you're just like completing... Like, I want to have this whole set.
Yeah, I enjoyed the first set so much that I wanted to see what they've got. And there are a few things on here that are obscure.
Yes,
of course
there
I
are.
There are, without
a doubt. I felt like it's about half and half. Like, about half that you know going in, and another half that were a little bit more obscure around there. Maybe, you know, two-thirds of them or something. But, yeah, there's, like, some in there that were lesser known, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the stuff from the big artists, Men at Work...
Yep.
Is on there. And it's, I can't remember which hit, but it's one of their big hits. Radar Love by Golden Earring is somewhere on here, which I don't even know if I would have considered that to be a
new wave
song. Unlike the first set, I don't quibble with it being characterized as new wave hits of the 80s. They took a little more in the terms of liberty with defining the
it's a broad definition, I think. Yeah.
Which is fine. It's fine. Yep. But it's, you know, Talk, The Knack.
Yep.
The Knack was around before new wave was even a thing, I think.
Right.
Although they do have sort of the skinny tie thing going, I guess maybe
totally
new wave.
But then some of the less common things are Art of Noise,
Yeah.
The bongos, Aztec camera.
Oh,
yes. You know,
again, stuff that music fans, most people listening to this podcast have probably heard of, but the general public probably wasn't into Aztec camera back then. So,
well, I'll tell you right on that topic, as I pulled out volume 8, there's a song called Cath by the Bluebells. Are you guys familiar with this song?
No. Oh, my God. I'm familiar with it from the album.
Gorgeous, gorgeous pop song. A Scottish band, I believe.
Yes.
And man, is that a beautiful song.
So weary and I'm sent to the core of all your lying, and I will have no more. Too tired to care, no emotion to spare.
It's like, oh man, the Proclaimers mixed with Aztec Camera, kind of. And it's like, it's an incredible song. Also, another one I saw, Life in a Northern Town by the Dream Academy. You guys remember that? That was like a beautiful pop song as well. There are like real gems on here too. And some, like you said, pretty well-known stuff. She Blinded Me with Science. But then Whirly Girl by OXO or OXO. I have no idea what that is. But then another great song, We Don't Need This Fascist Groove Thing by Heaven 17. That was a cool song to listen to. I'll tell you, growing up around here in D.C., I had some friends who didn't like it when I went to this one bar, this one club. It was called Posers. And maybe you can see why, because it was a real new wave place. It was right when you went across the Key Bridge, literally. Right up M Street there from Dixie Liquor, which was another haunt. But it was a place where you went in and they were playing all these UK videos. And they'd play stuff like the Dream Academy, like over and over, in the Bluebells and, you know, and all these kind of hits. And it was different, you know, and people dressed in black and wore black lipstick. And I thought it was cool. My friends that like rock and roll and punk rock didn't think it was cool that I went there. But, you know, I had dreams of maybe meeting a dark, mysterious lady who...
Where the girls are, right?
They were there,
Exactly. But I think also you got to consider the time here, too. So this was, what did you say, 94
into 95,
So if you, like me at the time, lived in an area, so I was in Rockford, Illinois then, lived in an area that did not have a cool radio station.
Well, there's that,
These were great car CDs.
Absolutely.
To have. You take one of these in the car and you feel like you have your own little new wave radio station or, you know, 80s alternative radio station, right?
Right. Exactly.
And in many ways, that's a great point, Jim. In many ways, the precursor to the satellite, as Bill said, silo channels of, you know, now everything is put in that silo. And, you know, you go on, you know, what is it, XM 608, and it's, you know, XMU or whatever it is. And, and all that stuff. So in many ways, that's kind of the precursor to that. But I think the other kind of unspoken element, probably for anyone who listens to this podcast, is the fact that you went out and got it yourself and you worked to kind of put the pieces together. But it also gave you the tools, like Tim was suggesting with the history, it gave you the tools, it empowered you to understand more when you went into the record store, and to understand more when you listened to songs on the radio, and understand more when you talked with your friends. And you could get that, you know, from a compilation album. Not only did you get all that knowledge about one band, you got it about seven or eight different bands, right? So you suddenly exponentially expanded what you could know and where the connections were. And that's one thing I always loved about compilation records, and always bought them whenever I could. But yeah, I mean, who wanted to listen to the whole Thompson Twins album? Nobody really, except there's like two really good songs.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Well, this was a point I was going to make yesterday with KTEL and didn't think of it. And you're right about this too. It's like, there was a bias among, especially like sort of casual music fans against buying whole albums because it was like, there's two good songs or three good songs, and they're only thinking of the ones that were on the radio.
That's
right.
They
don't want all the deep
the ones
cuts,
they haven't heard yet.
Right? Right? And so that the compilation album satisfies that need for those people to just have hit songs, right?
And sometimes, you know, when you listen to that hit song two or three times in a row, maybe you say to yourself, well, I'm not sure if these guys are going to do any better than this.
Well,
you know, and there is
in
that,
some cases,
which is kind of interesting too. Yeah.
In some cases, even to the music fan, they're like, I don't know that that band has a whole album in them.
Yeah.
So this works for me.
Right.
Yes.
Well,
right.
The perfect example of that, and my final thought on this was that if nothing else, one virtue of this series is it allows me to have One Night in Bangkok on disc without having to buy the soundtrack to the whole Chess musical.
Yes.
That's right.
There you go.
Very good point. That's a perfect example, right?
And that's a banging tune. Actually.
It is. Good song.
It really is.
Bangkok, oriental sitting in the city, don't know what the city is getting. The creme de la creme of the chess world in a show with everything but Yul Brynner. Time flies, doesn't seem a minute since the Tyrolean spa had the chess bars in it. All change, don't you know that when you play at this level, there's no ordinary venue. It's Iceland, or the Philippines, or Hastings, or this place.
One night in Bangkok, in the world's your oyster. The bars are temples, but the pulse ain't free.
Funny.
Murray Head.
Yeah. Is it, Bill, is it the case for this New Wave Hits compilation series that there's not a specific city or a specific like subgenre? It's just like it's a pretty wide net that they cast.
Yeah.
And then they just kind of mixed them all in.
I don't even know
British,
that it's,
American.
It's not even necessarily organized in any way, right? It's just 15 volumes.
I have never noticed any organization to it.
Yeah. And that was the brilliant thing about Rhino, I think, is they could work on both levels. They could do something like this, yet they could do something specific, tailored with a lot of notes and a lot of history, like the DIY sets. And they were, in a way, saving you and remembering and reminding you of what needed to be important. They were like the great librarian, in many ways.
Curator.
It was like,
that's right. Totally agree.
Totally let you know what's important and what to save.
Yeah,
and
just looking at that track list, I saw, wow. Wang Chung, Dance Hall Days. Yeah.
That's a good tune,
hear that
right?
song
Great
again.
Song.
But you don't need a whole Wang Chung album.
Right.
So. Well, I got to tell you, I was driving the other day and I like to put on the radio when I drive in
the
car.
We have lawnmower action now, so hopefully this won't bother that much.
It's a little late on a holiday weekend anyway.
It it's cold too.
Doesn't that guy have beer to drink?
What are you doing? Get a life. Only people ever to get in a fight on a podcast. A lawn care company.
Yeah.
They kicked our ass. I was driving. I like to put on the radio now. And, you know, when I get bored of sports talk radio or whatever, I'll put on the classic rocker, the 94.7 The Drive, I think, which is kind of an 80s station. But
yeah,
they were taking dedications, which I dearly appreciate. And it was like, Joe is delivering for Uber Eats tonight, and he wants to hear Simple Minds. And it was, Don't You Forget About Me, which I thought was just awesome. You know, it'd be like Dance Hall Days. I want to hear that right now. I don't know why. I'm just calling up.
Yep.
Just give it to me, man.
Well,
I'm driving around.
So this is the last thing I wanted to say about compilation albums in general, is that now in the age of streaming, you can just make your own playlists, right?
Yeah.
So, or listen to somebody else's playlist where you get that sense of discovery again.
Yep.
But I don't know that, aside from box sets, which appeal to collectors, I'm not sure how many like compilation albums, I guess now that's what they call music thing, lives on. But you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not sure. I don't know how many record companies want to put this amount of care into something.
It's a great point.
And collecting it and curating it and market and printing it and all of that and putting it out when some guy who knows just as much about new wave music can put up a great playlist on one of the streaming services and you can just go subscribe to that.
Right.
Right.
Are you talking about ROI, Jim?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think that's really interesting too. And I don't know, as our society evolves, and I don't want to turn this into any kind of situation outside of compilation records, but there is something super comforting about knowing that you can go put a disc, you know, into a player. And maybe that's just my age. I don't know if younger people feel that tactile connection anymore, but it's like, I mean, the thing, and Bill, thank you so much for these two episodes, because they've been so great. But I think when you said it made me feel like I was sitting in the offices of Stiff Records. I just want that feeling.
Yeah,
you know, that's right. All I want to get is that, whether it's a Spotify playlist or, you know, I'm listening to the radio or I'm at a brewery and I overhear somebody playing a playlist or I'm in the grocery store. And, you know, that's right. What I'm always craving. So these seem to really be able to offer that up, you know, in a big way. I don't have any of these. And
the new wave ones.
No, I do not.
They're great.
I got to start scanning the 99 cent bins over at CD Cellar to
see
how many
you can find them there once in a while. Because I've been trying to
definitely will.
Fill in the gaps on those. I have about half of them.
They look amazing. Oh, do you really? Wow. Yeah. That's fabulous.
Yeah.
I've
been looking for the ones I don't have.
Wow.
And that's what I do. A lot of times when I go to a used record store, if they have CDs, I go right to the compilation, the various artists.
Check the want list. Yep. Exactly. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
I got to start doing that. I got a long way to go.
And also tell people, I was telling Bill this off mic, that's just a great way to find just weird compilations, too.
Absolutely.
Go to that section. Mm-hmm. Like, I found this one that was just like Detroit Garage Rock.
Yep.
One time,
oh, wow.
You know?
Yep.
Just this CD that somebody put out, right?
Yep.
And it was so cool. You know, you can find stuff like that when you go there that you wouldn't necessarily, again, know the artists going through the regular racks, right?
Well, and that's another really interesting offshoot of this whole conversation is that how about the people... Not only like Tim and Dave Grohl that were inspired by the Cave Hill Records, but the people who started their own record label that were inspired by compilations and want to make their own, you know, here's my label, Silver Spot Records. I want to get all my friends and make a compilation because that's what you do,
right? Has to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
All right. Anything else, Bill?
I had one more to mention.
Okay.
Another purveyor, Patrick and I were talking about this in the car the other day, Sundazed Records.
Yep.
Also, is put
what
out
is it?
Sundazed.
Sundazed. Okay.
One word.
Like dazed by the sun.
Got it.
They do a lot of reissues, but they also do some compilations, and they put out a 4-CD set called Lost Legends of Surf Guitar.
Yeah.
Nice. Wow.
And that one I found out about because I listen to a lot of streaming. I like surf music. But you don't hear a lot of it on the radio, especially in Northern Virginia. So I listen to a lot of streaming shows that are surf music shows. And I noticed that the DJs kept mentioning, you know, that was this song from Lost Legends. They kept mentioning this set over and over again. So I just took the plunge and bought it. It's a lot of good first wave, you know, 1960s surf music. The reason I specifically wanted to mention it was something, I forget who said it. Surf music especially can be really hard to find because a lot of the first wave of surf music was done, you know, bands that did one album, maybe.
Right.
Maybe they did one single for some obscure album in who knows where. And then the band immediately broke up because, you know, half of them had just graduated from high school and were going off to college in the fall.
That's right.
So this
I'm reporting to the Marines at the end of August.
Yeah, exactly. So this is another example of compilations.
Yeah.
Not only as a way to find things, but from the point of view of the people producing it, it's to preserve the music
exactly.
and make available things that they must have existed at one time on vinyl because Sundays tracked them down and was able to put them on the disc. But I'll be dipped if I'm going to be able to track these things down and then convince my wife to let me buy them.
Right,
So
it is archaeological in many ways. And
I love it.
Sundays has done some amazing stuff with the early country rock scene, too. A lot of the stuff in L.A. and what would be International Submarine Band type stuff that was proto country rock, right? Some of that, you know, really, really early stuff they've unearthed and some Moby Grape stuff. I have one Moby Grape record that they reissued that was amazing, too. So it goes to a deeper level. And Bill's right. It's a very important part of preserving what people believed in and worked really hard to get. I mean, think about a guy like Skip Spence, who was in Moby Grape and, you know, later went mad, but, you know, put out all this amazing music and his soul was in those songs and on that tape. And it needed to be preserved before it disintegrated, literally.
And a lot of this obscure stuff, even if it's been digitized, isn't available on the streaming services.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's true, too.
Right, because it's too, there'd be no reason to do it. Yeah.
Okay, this is great. So appreciate, Bill, you bringing this topic and these series to
Thank
us,
you, sir.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
This worked out great. I think there's going to be a lot of interest in compilation records. So if you guys know...
This could be a series.
Yeah, it could be.
I'm going to have to get to CD Cellar before Patrick tomorrow.
Yeah, there
That's
you go.
Right. Yeah. Good luck.
So we talked here today specifically about series of compilation albums. So that's what
right.
we'd like to hear about from people. But if you have like just one that you really love, mm-hmm. just some singular one, that's fine too.
Yep.
We'd love to hear about it. Tell us about your favorite compilation albums. The way to do that is to call and leave a message, 612-440-1984. There you go. Or you can send us a voice memo or just, you know, type out an email and send that to rock@suburbspod.com or find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those at Suburbs Pod. All right. Tomorrow, we're going to do May New Music.
Sweet.
I think I go first and then you go second this month.
I think you're right.
All right. So we're going to do that to round out the week. And these guys are going to hang out. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lennon.
Patrick Foster.
Bill Mulligan.
And Tim Hoffman.
All right. We'll talk to you all tomorrow.
Take your baby by the hand and make her do a handstand. And take your baby by the heel and do the next thing that you feel. We were so advised in a dance hall days. We were cool on craze. When I, you, and everyone we knew could believe, do, and share in what was true. Oh, I said, dance all day's love.
Doesn't that guy have beer to drink?
What are you doing? Get a life.